And this is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
And later on, eliminating New York's tipped sub-minimum wage.
But first, we have an old friend, leading workers' rights advocate Saru Jayaraman, who is the author of Beyond the Kitchen Door and considered to be, and she is, one of the top 50 most influential people in the restaurant industry. She's a leader of Rock United, which has grown to over 13,000 members across 26 cities in the U.S., winning 15 worker-led campaigns totaling $8 million in stolen tips and wages. And she joins us to talk about how, with thousands of their jobs on the line, Olive Garden and Darden workers are prepared to take direct action in New York City. And it really is nice to speak with you again, Saru.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you too, Mimi.
And where are you this time? I know you were all over the place.
I'm in an airport in Washington, D.C., so I apologize for any background noise.
We like the ambiance of people in struggle who are on the move, and you are a mover and shaker. So, I mean, this is big stuff. Talk about the predatory hedge fund, Starboard Values, increasing control over Darden, which is a family of restaurant brands, which through subsidiaries owns and operates more than 1,500 restaurants, employing more than 150,000 people. And it just released a 300-page presentation on the future of Olive Garden. Tell us what's at stake.
First of all, I think a lot of people probably don't know who and what Darden is. Darden is actually the world's largest full-service restaurant company and the world's largest employer of tipped workers, and has been for a very long time one of the leading lobbying groups within the National Restaurant Association and outside of it to keep wages and working conditions for both restaurant workers and all workers low. In fact, they led the fight to keep the wage at $2.13 an hour at the federal level for tipped workers. They, in many states and at the federal level, have definitely spearheaded the fight to prevent citizens in different states from passing local paid sick days ordinances, even if they should want to. And they've lobbied heavily against healthcare reform and for exemptions and loopholes for corporations such as themselves with regard to healthcare reform. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. They have lobbied extensively on a number of issues, basically fighting anything that would improve wages and working conditions for working people, in particular for their own employees. They own Olive Garden. Until recently, they owned Red Lobster, and they own a number of other brands, Eddie V's, Seasons 52, Bahamas Breeze. And recently, over the last year, they've been embroiled in a really incredible hedge fund fight where, you know, we've been organizing workers in Olive Garden and the Capital Grille Steakhouse, which is part of the company, and Longhorn Steakhouse and a bunch of these other brands for the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years. And over the last year in particular, these hedge funds have come in and really tried to break up the company and shake up the company, as hedge funds will do, to try to get more value out of the pieces of the whole rather than the company as a whole. So one of them is Starboard and is trying to take over the company, and in doing so has presented this plan that includes massive layoffs and franchising of the company. The company's not currently franchised. And all of this will impact almost 200,000 workers in this company. And our analysis of what's going on is that it really truly is a reflection of kind of growing economic inequality in America. You see brands like Red Lobster and Olive Garden, although they still are some of the largest brands in America, no doubt. There's this move definitely to kind of break off the brands that where working people eat from the brands that a lot of these companies are pursuing, which are sort of the upscale foodie brands, and really sort of separate, you know, really kind of grow the upscale foodie brands while there's growth in fast food, and kind of sort of isolate these middle restaurants, these casual restaurants like the Olive Gardens and Red Lobsters of the world, from what they see as growth, which is in the foodie upscale market. So it's really kind of a weird reflection of what's going on in the economy overall and being played out in this one company.
If you could just delve a little deeper into this. So there's this call for massive layoffs, or this potential of mass layoffs. The franchising at Olive Garden, which is the flagship brand of the world's largest full-service restaurant company. Can you break that down a little bit more for us as to what that means for the workers? And what really is the motivation? What does Starbucks value gain from this?
This company is a little unique among restaurant companies in that they're not franchised. They own all of their own real estate. So every Olive Garden, they own the building, the property where the restaurants are. And so what they're trying to gain is money. They're trying to basically break up the value of the company so they can leverage the real estate and leverage the money of the separate brands, right? So that you're trying to separate the companies so they can leverage financing out of each of the separate pieces of the company. They're seeing the pieces separated as more valuable than the whole. That kind of breakup will definitely impact workers in a number of ways. For one thing, they're proposing tremendous layoffs. You know, this is a huge employer, you know, one of the largest employer of tipped workers and full-service restaurant workers in the world. So huge layoffs could really impact workers. But the franchising is also a really dangerous move because it could impact the workers in terms of lower. Already workers have been fighting really hard with saying the direction we need to move, and many shareholders have joined workers in saying this, the direction we need to move is much better wages and working conditions. There's real momentum in the United States right now that we've been leading with others to eliminate the lower wage for tipped workers. There's real momentum to move in the opposite direction and really get paid sick days and better wages. And the move towards franchising that Starboard is pushing could actually move in the opposite direction of really creating varying and lower quality standards for workers. So there's been a shakeup of management. CEO has been moved out. These hedge funds are trying to take over. And I think the point for us is not who's in control or, you know, we want the workers to have a voice, a seat at the table. And we want whoever is going to be in charge to basically understand that it's in the best value of everybody, shareholders, customers, workers alike, that these workers be treated with dignity and respect and paid a livable wage.
Now, I use the word chattel, which really was taken from one of the workers themselves, a 15-year industry professional who was employed by Olive Garden for 6 years, who says, enough is enough. You can't treat us as assets to be sold. Now, there have been thousands of signatures on petitions that have been generated from Darden employees to meet with Starboard Value and Darden restaurants. What are the demands and what has been the response from both the hedge fund and restaurant company?
So Rock Leaders initiated a petition and 5,500 signatures were collected by Darden restaurant workers all over the country demanding, like I said, a voice, a seat at the table, saying as long as you guys are going through this incredible, basically power struggle to find out who's going to end up with leadership of this company, you need to include the workers who are actually the ones carrying out the work that you're making money off of. And actually, we have had some response from Starboard, no response from anybody else so far. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what develops because it's not about simply responding. It really is about, are they actually going to genuinely listen to the workers in terms of really hearing that far from laying people off and franchising and moving in ways that would split up the company and really hurt the workers, what we really need to be doing is investing in livable wages and working conditions for these workers. So I think talking is a first step, but it really needs to be a genuine seat at the table as all these changes are being made.
And if the workers continue to be ignored as to a substantive role by Starboard, Darden, and other shareholders, if they continue to be treated as though they're assets to be sold off, what are they intent on doing?
Workers are already planning actions all over the country. You're going to be seeing workers in the streets, Darden workers in the streets in New York, Chicago, L.A., and a bunch of other cities across the country workers will be going to the shareholder meeting as they've been going for the last couple of years. We're going to be raising up our voices as restaurant workers, as Darden workers, over the next couple of months. And I think what people are going to be seeing increasingly, maybe, you know, you've seen the Walmart workers rise up and the fast food workers. Well, full service restaurant workers are next in line, and they're definitely going to be coming out early October as the Darden shareholder meeting plays out. You're going to see workers demanding that their voices be heard.
Just to be clear, their voices be heard toward what end? What is it that they are insisting as a fundamental, as an essential for themselves as workers?
Yeah, it's a long list of things, but I think at the top is definitely a role, a seat in the table, and in this negotiation, and livable wages and paid sick days are some of the key things people are fighting for. This company really has been a leader, as I said, in fighting. What we have to understand is that Darden doesn't just follow very poor standards, right? They don't just pay the abysmal minimum wage of $2.13 an hour. They don't just not provide paid sick days because the law doesn't require them to. It's really important to understand that they set those laws, right? They are the primary lobbying group with tremendous voice and power within the National Restaurant Association and outside of it in Congress and in every state, preventing people from passing paid sick days ordinances, preventing the minimum wage for tipped workers from going up. So they don't follow the abysmally low laws. They set the laws. And this is what workers and shareholders alike are demanding. We need you to not only stop lobbying on these issues, but change these issues, these conditions in your own restaurant company. As the world's largest full-service restaurant company, you could set a different standard. You could be a leader that you currently aren't.
And as we said, Darden Restaurants, Inc., which employs more than 130,000 people across the U.S., has its annual shareholders meeting coming up. So tell us what we can do as consumers to support our sister and brother workers who are planning to respond to the shareholders to fight like hell for the rights that they deserve. What is to be done? How do we support them so that the workers absolutely do get a seat at the table?
Yes, we need everybody to join us on October 9th, the day before the shareholder meeting in New York City. We're going to be having actions. We're going to be going directly to the company and to the hedge funds and demanding this, that our voices be heard. If everybody could join us, you can get information on where and exactly when on October 9th on our website, rocunited.org. That's one thing. Another thing is, you know, we will be putting information out about calling the company and letting them know how you feel and letting them know that workers must have a seat in this crazy fight. We'll have information about that on our website as well. So those are two immediate things. I think there's also a broader fight that Darden plays a key role in that you're going to see coming out in the next couple of months to eliminate the lower wage for tipped workers in multiple states and ultimately at the federal level. For that, we really confuse people in every state calling their legislators and saying, you know, I don't believe workers who earn tips should be earning a subminimum wage. I believe everybody in America should get a wage and not have to rely on customer tips.
Saru, we don't want you to miss your airplane. That's what you heard in the background. And really, I want to thank you for the work that you do, for being with us.
Thank you so
much. And I really want to strongly recommend that people also pick up Beyond the Kitchen Door, authored by Saru Jayaraman. And we're going to be there with our sister and brother Darden workers. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people that are employed by the largest entity of its kind in the world, and they want a seat at the table, and we're going to make sure that's exactly what they get. Thank you for joining us. And we've been speaking with Saru Jayaraman, who is one of the leading workers' rights advocates in the country and a leader of ROC United.
And now, eliminating New York's tipped sub-minimum wage with Paul Sahn, General Counsel, National Employment Law Project.
229,000 low-wage tipped workers are not working at what most people understand to be the minimum wage in New York State. And, of course, Paul, welcome to Building Bridges.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And if you can lay out the parameters of what we're talking about in this new front that is arising in the fight for fair pay for low-wage workers in New York, this brand new coalition of women leaders, food delivery workers, and low-wage tip workers. Tell us about it.
You're absolutely right that most New Yorkers are shocked to hear that the tip food service workers, like the Domino's delivery guy or the waitress at a Pizza Hut or your local diner, is paid just $5 an hour. It's very, very little. It's, you know, it accounts for the very high poverty rates that this hardworking, fast-growing workforce faces, and it's economically completely unnecessary. Many other states guarantee tipped workers get paid the full minimum wage, and which is the New York minimum wage is going to go to $9 under an agreement Albany approved last year. Many other states require that tipped workers get the full minimum wage, like $9 with tips on top of that. That's what California, Oregon, Washington, and a bunch of other states require, and it's completely manageable for the restaurant industry. In fact, the restaurant jobs are growing faster in those states than in New York, not slower. It's a real common sense solution to fight poverty in this fast-growing area where most of the workforce is women, many of them people of color. And which brings us to today. When New York raised the minimum wage last year, the Republican-controlled Senate actually wanted to freeze the tipped wage for restaurant workers at $5 an hour. And the Assembly didn't agree with that, and as a compromise, they punted it to Governor Cuomo and his labor commissioner, Peter Rivera, and told them to appoint a wage board, which has the power to decide what the new minimum wage will be and make it law. And then we'll have hearings and make a decision late fall. And so this coalition is coming together to urge Governor Cuomo and Labor Commissioner Rivera to raise the tipped wage for this hardworking workforce to the full minimum wage of $9 an hour, which is what other states are doing, and their restaurant industries are thriving.
So you're advocating no sub-minimum tip minimum wage. Everybody would be earning at least the minimum wage if your proposal goes through. So you want to get rid of that, right?
That's correct, with tips on top of it. And you know, what the other side will often say is they'll point out under the current system, this so-called tip credit system, where we have this lower minimum wage for tipped workers, the employer is supposed to make up the difference if tips fall short. So that if a worker averages less than if you're paying pay $5 an hour and the minimum wage goes to $9, you'd have to get $4 an hour in tips to make up the difference. The employer is supposed to make up. Provide extra wages if the tips fall short. The problem is it's a super complicated, really unworkable system, and it's widely recognized that there are high levels of noncompliance. The U.S. Labor Department and the White House issued a report this spring saying that the tip credit system is unmanageable for workers and employers alike, causing high levels of violations. This is coming from the nation's top wage enforcement agency, and so they're recommending raising the tipped minimum wage to a higher level because that base wage is much more straightforward and enforceable. They have, from their audits, they see much higher compliance rates with it, and so it's the best strategy for fighting poverty among this hardworking, fast-growing workforce.
I am not sure that the public as a whole understands how little the tipped workers generally make in the respective industries. Could you put a human face and talk about some of the examples you give of these workers in your report?
Yeah, in the food service industry, it is workers like the Domino's delivery driver who is paid $5 an hour, actually often generally pays for, has to pay for his own gas, makes, they're actually a sub-industry, a category of a restaurant tipped worker who almost everyone realizes faces massive wage theft, and most are definitely not getting the full minimum wage. But it's the waiter at a at a diner in Queens or in an Applebee's up on the expressway or in Buffalo, the bussers and the other restaurant staff that help them. And there are actually, you know, other key tipped industries that are fast growing are car wash jobs, nail salon jobs, the workers in the airport that help elderly and disabled passengers around. But actually, one of the New York system is very complicated, kind of confusing. It's only the restaurant and hotel tipped workers right now where their pay was frozen and who are going to get a raise based on what the governor and Commissioner Rivera's wage board decides. The other tipped workers, car wash workers and the airport workers and the nail salon workers, they actually already got a partial raise. They're at 75% of the minimum wage, which is a little better. Essentially, they don't have a powerhouse industry, the restaurant lobby, fighting to keep their pay frozen, so they actually got a bit of a raise, and they're doing better than restaurants. But we actually are urging that everyone get evened up to the full minimum wage. This tip credit system is unworkable, and other states are showing it's unnecessary.
Well, it's not like people are going to get rich on the minimum wage if they're earning that. I mean, this minimum wage will go up to $9 until the end of next year in New York. So, I mean, it's not as if people are going to get overpaid by this.
No, absolutely not. And the poverty rates are more than double for restaurant workers in these other tipped occupations, and more than double that of the workforce as a whole. And if it's true, some of the tipped workers are averaging a little, you know, are getting tips that bring them up to the full minimum wage, but they're still averaging less than $10 an hour. It's super low pay. They're hardworking. These are fast-growing jobs. The restaurant jobs are one of the fastest-growing segments of our economy. They're one of the lowest paying, and it's not only hurting workers and families, and more and more of them are adults in their 30s and 40s and older holding these jobs, but it's also holding back New York's economy, which needs a consumer class with decent wages that can afford to spend to drive sales that allow other businesses to hire. And there's growing recognition we need to do things to raise pay for working New Yorkers, and this is a smart action that actually the governor can control himself. He doesn't have, he can't be stymied by this Republican-controlled Senate, that he has the power to do the right thing and promote economic justice for low-wage and working women.
Paul, one of the other things that we mentioned that to me is most gratifying is that there is a new coalition, and indeed part of the coalition has been a real strong grouping of women and women's rights groups that have seen the necessity for advocating on this question. Tell us a little bit about who those women's groups are and why you think they found the necessity, the imperative to join this coalition. What does it mean for women's rights?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. There's much more organizing and sort of a bright light being shined on this tip workers and their struggles, and the fact that they're overwhelmingly women workers. And so the ROC, the Restaurant Opportunity Center, is one of the key organizing groups focusing on it, highlighting its role as a women's justice issue. But working with groups like women political donors, elected leaders. There's a whole broad coalition, and nationally, many of the national women's groups are really highlighting that this is a key women's pay equity issue. Women still earn, cents, fractional cents on the dollar for every dollar men earn, and the restaurant industry is a contributing factor. It's super fast growing, very low wage, and this is a key policy solution that can. The governor and labor commissioner can implement to make progress in closing that gender wage gap.
Well, we've been talking about New York State, but this tip subminimum wage extends throughout the country. And I know there have been other studies also. And the New Jersey, for instance, the tip minimum wage is $2.13 an hour. And I don't know what the other states adjoining New York are, but there are a lot of states that it's really abysmal. Is there a push anywhere else also in other parts of the country to solve this problem like you are doing?
Yeah, there are. There are a variety of states across the country that are pushing through voter ballot initiatives, or one of the places where worker advocates have been able to make progress in raising the minimum wage. So you're right, it's the federal minimum wage is even worse because it's for tipped workers. It's been frozen for a long time. And New York is about in the middle of the states for its tipped wage level. New York's is it was in the 60s%, and what will determine whether what level Governor Cuomo raises it to. But New York is a high cost place, and there are a bunch of states that have raised the tip workers to the full minimum wage, and they are among the fastest growing states in the country for restaurant jobs. So it's clear that this is not a drag on the restaurant industry, and it's one of the just a smart reform we can make to help promote more better paying jobs in our economy.
Well, while I'm waiting for the $15 an hour minimum wage or a living wage, which I would prefer, but in any event, where are we at? What are some of the politics behind the Cuomo administration's wage board charged with recommending an increase in the state's tip sub-minimum wage? Do you think that's likely to happen?
The wage board, and you know, there's a deadline of February 2015 for it to wrap up its work. So the administration's definitely planning to do it, and we're optimistic that they will focus on this as an opportunity where they can work around the roadblocks in the Albany legislative process and do the right thing for working women and economic justice and improve jobs in the state. And so it's an excellent opportunity for the governor and the labor commissioner, and the coalition looks forward to working with them. And it's worth flagging also, you know, in addition to this campaign, there's the governor has thrown his weight behind a campaign in the legislature next year to raise the state minimum wage a little bit more to 10 and to give New York City the power to raise its minimum wage higher, as high as $13 an hour. And so that's, Albany will consider that next January. And, you know, if the Democrats take over the state Senate as provisionally as expected because of the Independent Democratic Caucus reuniting with Democrats, then that's the other big statewide wage fight where the governor has a strong proposal, and we're hopeful about progress.
Paul Sun, General Counsel of the National Employment Law Project, NELP, thanks for the study. Thanks for the work that you folks do. And I'm delighted about this new coalition that has formed to bring some justice to the 229,000 low-wage tipped workers who deserve a real minimum wage. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.